I'm Jim Benson, and you're listening to TV Time Machine on Intelligent Talk, 1170 KCBQ. Like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and visit our show archives at tvtimemachine.com.
Ken.
What is the Potomac?
Good, Ken.
What's JFK Airport?
Yeah, Ken.
What's home plate?
Home plate, right, Ken.
Who's Mao?
Yes.
What for 600?
Ken.
What's Jehovah?
Correct, Ken.
What's Skylab?
Right.
Sky for 600?
Ken.
What is Caesar?
Yeah, Ken.
Who is Rasputin?
Correct, Ken.
Who's Ivan the Terrible?
Correct, Ken.
Who's Peter the Great?
Peter the Great, yes, Ken.
Who's Lonnie Anderson?
Correct, Ken.
What is snowboarding?
You got it, Ken.
What's a database?
That's it, Ken.
What is Photoshop?
Yes, Ken.
What is Eudora?
Yes, Ken.
What's a penny black?
Penny black, Ken.
What are bicycles?
Correct, Ken.
What are the munchies, man?
Yeah, Ken.
What is myopia?
Yes, Ken.
What's a microbe?
Right, Ken.
What's a hostel?
Hostel is right.
Maps for 1600. What's the legend?
Correct, Ken.
What's the United States Geological Survey?
Ken.
Maps for 800.
That's right.
Ladies and gentlemen, you're about to embark on a journey through a vast galaxy that traverses memory, generations, and popular culture. A magical trip through time as we meet the men and women of yesterday and today who have shaped not only what we see on TV, but the way we see ourselves. I'm Jim Benson. Join me, if you will, on an exploration of television's past, present, and future as we climb aboard the TV Time Machine. Our destination subject today will be Jeopardy! Champion Ken Jennings. Mr. Jennings himself will join us for a fascinating excursion examining his extraordinary game show winning streak and his latest book, Because I Said So. We'll begin our exciting and fun-filled odyssey right after these brief messages.
I was born Mary Tyler Moore.
Is Jesse Donald Knotts.
Fred McFeely Rogers.
Leslie Moonves.
Isabel Sanford.
Leslie Renee Stahl.
Robert Edward Turner.
Regis Francis Philbin.
Aaron Spelling.
Since 1999, the Archive of American Television has been preserving the memories, knowledge, and insights of the men and women whose talents and vision have helped shape this remarkable medium. Over 500 video interviews with these TV legends are now available on the Archive of American Television website at metvlegends.org. There, you can sign up to receive news, updates, and also become a sponsor to help preserve television history for generations to come. That's metvlegends.org.
The mythological proportions of Star Trek provide something that's missing in people's consciousness, psyche.
The Archive of American Television, capturing television history, one voice at a time. Today on the TV Time Machine, we ask you to listen as we form all of our answers in the form of a question as we go behind the scenes on the classic TV game show, Jeopardy! In this edition of our program, we are proud to welcome Jeopardy! Champion Ken Jennings. Mr. Jennings' incredible 74-game winning streak on the venerable game show is the stuff of legend, the television equivalent of Joe DiMaggio's 56-game hitting streak, a feat that may never be matched. Over the next few segments, Ken Jennings will help us explore virtually every aspect of his incredible experience on Jeopardy, including some of the secrets that enabled him to reach such grandiose heights of glittering game show glory, while also discussing his funny, entertaining, and enlightening book, Because I Said So, the truth behind the myths, tales, and warnings every generation passes down to its kids. Again, for those of you intrepid enough to put yourself in Jeopardy, feel free to grab your buzzer as we slip away from a questionable past to experience a present with all the answers. Ken, thank you for coming on board the TV Time Machine.
It's a pleasure. Thanks for having me on your time machine.
The answer is Washington State, South Korea, and Singapore.
What is the countries where I grew up?
Ken, when you were growing up, what was that like for you, and did you experience much culture shock as a young lad living in those countries?
I was about 7 years old when we moved to Seoul, and it was a very different place. You know, in the early 80s, Seoul looked about like it did at the end of the Korean War. You know, the Asian economic miracle had not happened, and suddenly, you know, here I am, this little blonde suburban Seattle kid jumped into the middle of this big city, but I loved it. We loved it. Looking back, I sort of realized that it made me curious about the world in a way that I wouldn't have been. It made me sort of realize that, very different cultures work just fine. You know, there's not just one way, one American way to do everything. And my parents totally let us run around this city of 10 million people. So we were, you know, kings of the city at a very young age, and I sort of feel like that's sort of given me this sort of Batman-like sense of mastery over every city where I've lived since then, just sort of imprinting on my childhood, just running around Seoul, getting up to mischief.
What did you do specifically besides mischief to acclimate yourself to those cultures?
I remember looking at a lot of maps. You know, I was a big geography nerd already, and moving overseas really cemented that. You know, I wanted to look at maps of East Asia and see where we were living now, and it was very cool to me that we were like on the other side of the world from where we were when it was day here, it was night there. And I also remember just loving, you know, road maps of the U.S., sort of missing, you know, the sort of normal childhood experience I knew that I might have had otherwise, but just obsessing over roadmaps of Delaware and West Virginia and things like that. You know, they're the little names of towns, you know, Midvale and Fairhaven or whatever. They sounded very exotic and far away to me from there. But I went to an English language school. A lot of my friends were Americans whose parents were stationed on the army base there. We weren't military. My dad was just a lawyer. But I remember it made me very hungry for American pop culture. You know, if anybody had a new VHS with a new Michael Jackson video on it, it got passed around like gold or cigarettes in prison. You know, we were starved for American pop culture. And I think that was also very formative for turning me into a total trivia nerd.
Yes, I was going to ask you about that. Did you watch television much overseas, and what did you have access to?
You know, if you didn't speak Korean and enjoy Korean soap operas, you really only had one option, which was Armed Forces TV. You know, the Army's TV station got some American programming, most of it pretty crappy, and all of it late, all of it months late,
right.
Unless it was like the Super Bowl or something. In the early 80s, we finally got a satellite hookup, and we could finally watch Monday Night Football on Tuesday, of course, because the time changed. But one thing there always was Jeopardy. Jeopardy was always on right after school from 1984 on. And so me and my friends had no choice. We were forced by this one-channel, one-party system into watching Jeopardy. So my fourth-grade class, we were all Jeopardy obsessives, and we had our strategy down, and we knew when people bet on daily doubles wrong. So it was a very funny little testing ground for future game show champions.
So you watched it obsessively every day? What?
Yeah. I would run over to school to watch Jeopardy. And even as a kid, even before we moved to Korea, I loved game shows. I remember crying on my first day of kindergarten because I realized for the first time that I was going to be missing, you know, Hollywood Squares and Family Feud that day. I loved my game shows for some reason.
What appealed to you most about Jeopardy and the game itself?
My kids love Jeopardy even today. Like, I have a hard time watching it. I hear the sound effects and the music, and I get very stressed, you know? It's like I'm back out there. I'm back in Nam, you know? But the kids love it. I think it's because it's very repetitive. Kids like these templatized shows, you know, Dora the Explorer. Everything's exactly the same every show, Blue's Clues. And Jeopardy's the ultimate pattern show, you know, almost down to the second. It's always the same every day, and I think kids like that repetition. I also remember liking that sense of mastery of, you know, when you get a question right at 10 years old, you're like, wow, I knew something that only adults know. You know, maybe it's baby boomer trivia about the Beatles that my dad doesn't know. Maybe it's, right, you know, greatest generation trivia about Fibber McGee and Molly that my grandpa wouldn't know. You know, there's a sense of adulthood and maturity that comes with, you know, being able to take your parents out of Trivial Pursuit even when you're a kid. And I think I liked that.
Now, when you were in Korea, in Singapore, you were watching Jeopardy. Did you ever fantasize about someday appearing as a contestant on the show?
I did think about it. Like, these were, but it didn't seem realistic. You know, like, these were my idols. You know, today I watch the show and I just think, oh, what a terrible sweater. Or, oh, I can't believe you're telling that story about your cat. You know? But as a kid, I would watch the show. And to me, these would be the smartest people in the world. You know, wow, can you believe how cool these three people are? And so I don't know if it really occurred to me that this was something I could do. They always seemed, you know, unattainable, like they're fictional characters, you know, some insurance salesman from Kansas City. I mean, it wasn't actually something that one could aspire to. I would have loved to, you know. If I knew that was a career path to be a professional ex-game show contestant like I am today, you know, I would have jumped at it. That was the one thing I was really good at in school, you know, knowing weird stuff, knowing trivia. But But I never really felt like it was something that normal people could aspire to. It wasn't until much later when I started playing some like quiz bowl in college, and I started to see people I knew from that world showing up on Millionaire and Win Ben Stein's Money, that I realized, wow, this is something you can do.
So as a young man, and over the years, I was absolutely fascinated by this. What do you do to create and maintain such a broad base of knowledge? What discipline is involved in that?
I think it's not what people imagine. I get the idea that people imagine these Jeopardy nerds with like stacks of encyclopedias next to their toilet. You know, like they're always memorizing almanacs and phone books and stuff. They're all Rain Man style savants. And from what I've seen, that's not true at all. They're actually quite a bit like me. Ever since they can remember, they've always sort of had this weird knack for just sucking information out of the air like a sponge. They're very, very curious people. They pay attention to stuff no matter what they're doing, just looking at a billboard or reading the back of a cereal box or whatever it is. They're trying to learn something new. And there's probably some you know, genetic memory thing that lets them file it away and retrieve it faster. But it's almost just an unconscious thing. It's like a hunger for it. If there's text in front of you, you can't help but read it. If there's a map on the wall, you can't help but stare at it. It's almost unconscious, but it's a compulsion.
Now, you ultimately attended BYU. Now, at BYU, you mentioned this a little bit, your connection to trivia and quiz competitions was certainly strengthened. Tell us about that.
I was just walking around on campus one day. I transferred to BYU after I served a two-year Mormon mission where, you know, the kids take a couple years off of school and, you know, go full-time to do community service and preach the word or whatever. And I was in Madrid, Spain for 2 years. I transferred to BYU because I knew I had a lot of friends there. And I was walking on campus one day, and there was a sign up for a tryout for the Quiz Bowl team. And I sort of had this vague idea what Quiz Bowl is, but I didn't even know it still existed. It's like the old GE College Bowl game show where you know, teams of well-groomed 60s college students face off against each other, you know, answering questions about the Iliad and the periodic table and stuff like that. And it turns out, even though it went off the air decades ago, kids on college campuses still do this. They'll drive themselves to tournaments and you know, in the basements of dingy humanities buildings in the dead of night, they will continue to play this game show, even though it hasn't been on TV in years and years.
Right, it's a classic.
And,
it's a classic.
Yeah, I had no idea. I tried out for the team, made the team, and so a few, you know, a weekend or two a month, me and some friends would just, you know, hop in somebody's car and drive to Denver or the Bay Area or LA or somewhere and play our own little game show. And I started to remember all these facts that I had, you know, sort of locked up from a childhood of watching Jeopardy and, you know, take a study for the SAT and whatever. Because you realize as a teenager, it's not a hit with girls to be a trivia nerd. And you sort of...
Now it is.
Right. Well, yeah, maybe now. But I think most people tend to go in the closet, I think, at that point. I was deeply in the closet as a trivia nerd. And it was sort of nice to let the freak flag fly a little bit at these Quiz Bowl events.
Now, what events ultimately led to audition for Jeopardy?
My wife and I were going to be in L.A. for something like a wedding, I think. And I was excited. Okay, this time I'm really going to try out. And it turned out Jeopardy was not doing auditions that week. It was their week off, and I was just going to miss it by a few days. And I said, you know what? Screw it. I'm just going to drive. When we get back home to Salt Lake, I'm going to turn right around and drive right back to L.A. with a friend of mine. We're just going to road trip down there, and we're just going to try out for Jeopardy. Now, this is a terrible idea. You're not supposed to do this because they have tens of thousands of people trying out every year for just a few hundred spots. So it's 100 times harder to get on Jeopardy than it is to get into Yale or Harvard or something. So they tell people, please do not drive down to LA just to try out. But we were not to be daunted. And that's what we did. We took the test and we ended up both passing, actually.
What was audition day like for you? Was it particularly difficult? What kind of paces did they take you through?
It's a hotel conference room, you know, 100 sort of nerdy-looking, nervous people file in, and they have to take a 50-question written test, which is drawn from the harder categories of a Jeopardy board. And then the contestant people sort of entertain you and tell stories while they grade the test. And then they say, okay, here are the five or six people who actually passed, and the room sort of clears out, and you do a little sort of, and then the people who are left do a mini Jeopardy game. They, you know, they practice telling their not funny interview story to a host,
right,
calling out categories, and you know, it's a pretty low personality bar to be on Jeopardy, but apparently there is a bar because they do a, you know, it's like the interview portion of the Miss America pageant, I guess. And it was very, I remember it being very stressful. We had found this book at a remainder table called How to Get on Jeopardy and Win. And so me and my friend had been testing each other in the car on the way down, as you know, who discovered Neptune and, you know, the famous choreographer for the Bolshoi Ballet, you know, all the stuff that actually comes up on Jeopardy, but nowhere else in life. And we were very nervous.
So they called you and said, you're in. So how did you prepare for your first Jeopardy game?
Yeah, a year later, I get a phone call. You're going to be on in 3 weeks. I had totally forgotten about even trying out. I had given up hope. And they say we've also changed the rules so that you can go on playing indefinitely. They had just changed the rules like right. A few months previous, and I had no idea and didn't think that was going to matter. But I really panicked at that point. Only 3 weeks, you know, to learn everything, the sum of all human knowledge, which is what Jeopardy is. And I remember started watching the show obsessively. I found out I could watch it 2 or 3 times a day, including reruns. So I would stand behind my recliner at home, pretending it was a Jeopardy podium, and jamming my finger up and down on this little toddler toy, pretending that it was a buzzer, trying to figure out the timing of the tricky Jeopardy buzzer. And making flashcards so like my wife could just quiz me for hours about, you know, the stuff you need to know on Jeopardy, presidential dates and world capitals and constitutional amendments, the cabinet, potent potables. Jeopardy's always asking about cocktails.
Oh,
I
yeah.
don't drink, so.
Uh-oh.
Right. So we made all these mixed drink flashcards. So on the front, it would say a kamikaze, and on the back, it would list whatever's in a kamikaze. I don't even know today. So I apparently it did not stick with me. I could not be a Mormon bartender at this point, but that's what we spent 3 weeks doing.
What was your biggest concern going into that first show?
You know, just that I would freeze up. You always see people who obviously think they're going to do great. These are people, everybody on the show is the smartest person they know, and I'm sure they've never lost a game of Trivial Pursuit, and they do the Times crossword every day. And I think most of them just assume they're going to win, and obviously you're not. You know, 2/3 of them lose every night. And I feel like people don't know that. So you often see these people with these very cocky people can't figure out the buzzer or they whatever happens. I just didn't want to be the person who has the negative dollar
right.
amount and gets kicked out of Final Jeopardy, you know, gets exiled by Trebek early in the show.
Right.
That was really my only goal, not to get stage fright and do terribly. I really had no expectations of winning. I just wanted to, like, it was, you know, it was a lifetime dream, right? Ever since I was a kid, I wanted to just have fun and not appear to be a total idiot.
So in June 2004, you made your Jeopardy debut, as we'll hear in the following clip.
This is Jeopardy. Here are today's contestants. A fundraiser from New York, New York, Julia Lazarus. A software engineer from Salt Lake City, Utah, Ken Jennings. And now, here is the host of Jeopardy, Alex Trebek.
I came out quickly because I'm eager to get the game going. We have an excellent champion. Today he faces Julia and Ken, and we are delighted to have you with us.
When you were on the set and the game began, how did that feel? Was that surreal for you?
It was. You know, it's having looked at this through a magic TV window for 20 or 25 years, to actually be there was remarkable. This, you don't realize when you're just on your couch yelling out answers at home how surreal it is on the show, how fast it moves. You really don't have time to think. There's going to be 60 questions and answers over just like 22 minutes or so. You really don't have time to think about anything. You're nervous about the lights and the cameras and the audience and Trebek. You know, you've looked at him for years and he's standing right there. You can practically reach out and touch him. It's really just sort of a sensory, overwhelming experience. And I remember just sort of my brain sort of shutting down and just doing it on autopilot. So I feel like the practice really came in handy because it was mostly muscle memory just getting me through it.
In the early few minutes of that first game that you played, did it take you a while to get your land legs, to get the timing down, or were you into it immediately?
It seemed like the thing I had done with my 2-year-old's toy at home, trying to match the timing of the contestants on the show, actually worked. From the very beginning, I felt like I had the buzzer timing down. Very early on, there was a clue about Rutherford D. Hayes that I knew I would not have gotten if not for my flashcards. So I was feeling very good. And then towards the end of the second, or maybe halfway through the second round, the woman next to me figured out the buzzer timing. And from then, that point on, she was unstoppable, and she made a huge run and almost tied it up. So I was confident early and then very nearly got beat.
We're going to have to take a little break from our fascinating journey, but never fear. I'll be back in a lightning flash with Jeopardy! Champion Ken Jennings, author of the book Because I Said So, The Truth Behind the Myths, Tales, and Warnings Every Generation Passes Down to Its Kids, who is riding along with us on the TV Time Machine.